Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles. Tom and KJ with you, talking Florida State football almost exclusively today after that thriller of a game on Sunday night at Doak Campbell Stadium. We're joined by our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. He is participating via the Earl Bacon Agency hotline. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Doing well, guys. How are you?
Good. We saved the long-form conversation questions for you thus far. Just so you know, Wes Durham joined us last segment. But we saved the quarterback quandary and also the fourth down math questions for you. So, Keith, where would you like to start? With a quarterback, since they always get the attention?
Yes. Who's going to play and how much, Bob?
So I've consistently said both, and I even said, you know, put them both out there at the same time. I think I'm kind of adjusting that to say I think there's times where they're both needed. And it kind of goes against the grain of the old adage of, you know, having two and you don't really have one. Right now, the problem with Jordan is I can't have you have three turnovers in a game. That doesn't work for the team. I'm not saying they're all on him. There are circumstances such as pass protection breakdowns and who knows if the route was run crisply or not. At the same time, you throw Mackenzie Milton out there and he does not have that kind of escapability. He does have mobility. He does. And we've seen it pretty consistently. He moves really, really well on that leg, but there are advantages to going with Jordan and advantages to going with Mackenzie. And I think everybody's kind of leaning toward Mackenzie right now because he's back, because they've seen it. They can see the positives there. How he adjusts the arm angles is pretty phenomenal. The shovel pass the other night was pretty crazy. It was a little bit of Favre in that kind of playground confidence that I like with Mackenzie. Bottom line is I think you're going to have to use both in varying degrees this season, and especially to give Dave Clawson at Wake Forest something to think about, something to prepare for, waste that coaching staff's time at Wake Forest by using both this coming weekend.
I think that's fair, and I think that's what my answer is too. Normally, when you talk to a defense and you're not sure who the quarterback's going to be, they always give you the same answer that, well, they run the same plays. And that may be true, although we both know that we all know there's a few different plays you'd call with Travis in there than with Milton. And the reality is you are going to have a different plan if you're the opposition, I would think, because they do bring some different skill sets there. I was disappointed with Travis in that he'd had a really good fall, and I'd have to look honestly with the coaches, but I'd have to look at the all 22. It felt to me like he abandoned the pocket early several times, i.e. instead of stepping up, he bailed and spun and ran, and then everything's out of whack off time. Whereas Mackenzie, he gets the ball out. And so it's not just the turnovers that Jordan had, but how many plays couldn't be executed because he didn't release the ball on time. Now, again, easy for me to say without knowing, was the guy really open? Did Notre Dame do something that it just wasn't there?
I think that's very fair. I mean, what Jordan does well is escape and throw on the run. Does he throw on the run with accuracy is the obvious thing. And we saw some positives and some not. He made some great throws, I thought, from the pocket. The Malik McClain kind of crossing route pass in stride was phenomenal. The Ja'Kai Douglas deep ball, again, a great pass. But those seem to be, I don't want to say exceptions to the norm. It's just he doesn't have the full body of work through the pocket. He doesn't seem to want to stay in the pocket, understand the pressure, understand the time he has, trust the route. Like I've heard some people say, he's still aiming and not really throwing to where the guy is going to be, to where the receiver or tight end is going to be. He has still a lot to understand. Still well under 200 passing attempts at the college level. We have to kind of take that into account. He's still very much developmental, even though he is an older quarterback with maturity, with some experience now across, you know, now parts of three seasons.
I say just design some stuff, give both of them, you know, more than 20 reps against Jacksonville State, and just use that as another evaluation tool as you get ready for Wake Forest and play them both.
I honestly think they need to play Purdy some in this game if they can too, because I don't know when else you're going to get a chance to get him some live bullets, you know?
Wouldn't mind it if they gave, say, Jordan one quarter, McKenzie one quarter, Chuba gets the third, maybe a little bit longer into the fourth. I'm with you guys. It's perfect opportunity to pick up experience, comfort in the system now for these guys who are year two guys in the system. But for McKenzie too, he's just got to gain that kind of comfort week to week as far as what he's doing. Play all three of them for sure.
All right, so let's get to fourth down math, which last year Mike Norvell was one of the most aggressive coaches in the country. I think Florida State was eighth nationally in fourth down attempts, and they converted at a 53% rate. But we remember there were some that were you were really backed up. They weren't successful. I think there was one at NC State that comes to mind. I've tried to block out last season for the most part, but I think that happened the other night. So fourth and two at your own 31. I don't recall the exact time on the clock there. Mike Norvell was asked about it on Tuesday, defended it, say he'd absolutely do it again. I told Keith after the game, I said, I didn't really hate the decision. I didn't like the call, and maybe that was the execution. But what's your general thoughts on being that aggressive?
In the moment, I didn't like it. I was sitting next to Pat Burnham. He didn't like it. Right on the other side of me didn't like it. This is the way Mike Norvell runs. This is the way he rolls. He is going to go for it. It's an extreme confidence. It's an understanding of the analytics and what he's looking at. Numbers that, frankly, we don't have. We can't kind of be privy to. But there are coaches around the country who want to roll the dice and go for it on fourth down. That's what they're going to do. You know, last year, FSU was 15-28, 53.5%. I think that's pretty good. It's not phenomenal, honestly. The issue I have is when you do it on the FSU side of the 40 and you are truly rolling the dice, the situation, I think, in Norvell's view was Florida State had just given up two touchdowns on consecutive drives. Sandwiched in between that, Jordan had an interception, and it was a really short offensive drive. So the defense, don't want to say with gas because you're coming out of halftime, but you're pretty well worn down. He's trying to protect the defense, but also spark the offense and just kind of get everybody fired up. I totally understand his viewpoint. My viewpoint, on the other hand, though, is you've got a really good punter, and you've got to kind of play safe a little bit. So I would have leaned toward punting it. But again, Norvell's looking at the numbers. He likes it. I think this is just the way he's wired. We're going to have to get used to a coach who really wants to push it and utilize all four downs.
And I think that's the key, because I too did not like the call at the time. There's two standard things that have been taught to me for years, and that may be why they're both wrong, because they've been taught to me for years. But number one, you always get points on the first drive. So if you're in field goal position on the first possession of the ball game, you kick the field goal. You don't go for it. You don't go for seven. You get something out of that first drive. And secondly, you don't start going for it on fourth down until it's the fourth quarter when you're backed up. But that's the old way. This is the new way. So we can just respectfully disagree. And Coach Norvell is going to do what he does. And there's going to be times when it pays off.
Well, I used the example, Keith, in our post game show. I don't remember the exact down and distance, but it was about their own 20-yard line where PJ Fleck went for it last week against Ohio State, got it, and Minnesota, as a result, was leading over Ohio State at the half and had them on the ropes for a little bit. So it's clearly a gamble. Now, what Norvell told the media on Tuesday was, "I've got complete confidence in my defense if we don't make it." What he meant, Bob, because I was down there, is our defense is absolutely gassed. And no matter where I trot them out there on the field right now, Notre Dame's going to gash them. That's what I saw. So you could you could argue that you left yourself more time on the clock by giving Notre Dame a shorter field to work with to go in and do the inevitable, which was score. But again, we need to get a fourth down math expert on the show. I'm not sure who that is. I know there's a lot of people who've written about it and are deep into the analytics, but I'd love to have the chart. It used to be the chart that told you when to go for two. I want the chart that tells you when you're supposed to go for it instead of punt. I've not seen that one yet, Keith.
And I don't believe you will, because I don't think it exists in any standardized form. Every coach has got their own one. But lest I digress.
Bob, Jermaine Johnson was every bit as good as advertised. He was named the ACC Defensive Lineman of the Week. Not coincidentally, and I didn't get an actual snap count, but he was not on the field for the majority of Notre Dame's first two touchdowns in the third quarter. He had gone into the locker room. So that was when Quayshon Fuller did play well, but it's also, I believe, when that screen pass was well executed. And maybe if you've got somebody who's more veteran, he recognizes that he's got to turn around and go the way the linemen were letting him leak in. But general thoughts on Jermaine and the defensive front.
I think Jermaine was as advertised. I think he brought to you the production, the energy, honestly. I mean, he was fired up when you were watching him celebrating sacks and tackles for loss. I think it fired up everybody along that front four. I mean, that was an energized group. And I know we're kind of thinking it through as a pass rush standpoint, but my goodness, 65 rushing yards against Notre Dame is pretty incredible. And Florida State, you know, I went back and looked through some old box scores. They've allowed at least 100 rushing yards to, you know, just about everybody. You go back to, I think the Sun Bowl against Arizona State was the last time an FBS team was held under 100 yards rushing. But I think a guy like Jermaine Johnson just sets the tone. He is just truly a tone setter. It's a bummer to see guys injured. We saw guys injured on the defensive front, offensive line. It affects everything. Quayshon Fuller isn't going to be nearly as much of a player as Jermaine, but Quayshon has shown he can be impactful, and he was coached by a Florida State guy in James Chaney too. So I think this is part of the growing pains. It's finding those second team guys who can step in, and yes, there is a drop off, but they're getting that game experience to kind of be comfortable with the situations and figuring out what they're supposed to do and how to do it just about as well as a starter would have.
One other takeaway offensively, Bob, this is a team that it doesn't have the best collection of skill talent that Florida State's ever had. There's not a Dalvin Cook or a Peter Warwick out there, but Corbin, the reports were true. He's definitely faster than he was. Keyshawn Helton showed a burst. McLean, with his size, he looked pretty darn fast when he turned upfield. Ja'Kai Douglas, I mean, there are some playmakers there. To me, the hurdle they've got to overcome is they can't be third and way behind the chains, which they were a lot in the fall camp too. I mean, I don't know how you got to find a way to get 4 yards and 3 yards and be in third manageable. And they just weren't there the other night.
Yeah. It's a tough situation. I don't know how you fix some of those issues, but the collection of talent that I think is emerging of these younger guys, I didn't see much from Ja'Kai Douglas in preseason camp that would lead me to believe he was going to be a big part of the game plan, but here he is, and he has a big splash play for them. Malik McLean, we saw him as a receiver. We didn't really see him too much as a blocker because scrimmages were closed, but Malik had some great downfield blocks. Ja'Shawn Corbin, I think that injury, going back to Texas A&M, for example, got a little bit, I don't want to say underreported, but I don't think we fully understood how significant that injury was. Again, truly a torn hamstring, one where you're back year one, but you're not fully back year one. Now we're seeing, I think, the full capabilities of what Corbin offers you. And the same with Keyshawn. He wasn't the same 1 year back. He didn't have that burst. He was still wearing a knee brace. It was just clunky, and he couldn't use his speed. His game was speed. Now we're kind of seeing these guys at their best. I think there's a true collection of, I feel like first and second team talent at a lot of positions. I'm still kind of looking for it at linebacker. I kind of want to see that linebacker depth really shape up and emerge to where you feel like you have a true two deep. But again, if the storyline from August was competition and depth, we're really seeing that kind of emerge early on. Small sample size, 60 minutes, but against a really big time opponent, that's really encouraging to see.
He is our Osceola insider, Bob Ferrante. Go ahead and subscribe to the Osceola. You can go to theosceola.com, $6.95 a month for insight like that from Bob. Thanks as always, sir.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Bob. More Front Row Noles after this.
Hi, I'm Bob Hobbs. We're always talking about getting your best deals, your best trade, and your best financing. But with these challenging times, we wanted you to know, if you can't make it in, we'll even bring the car to you, and we'll appraise your vehicle at your home or business. And for all our service customers that can't make it in, we'll pick up your vehicle, get it serviced, and bring it back to you. We just want to make it easy to do business. We appreciate our customers and want to say thank you for your business. So whether it's sales or service, come by and see us or check us out at HobsonChevrolet.com. Buy and service your vehicle the Hobson way.
Getting the kids to practice on time. Remembering if it's your day to bring snacks. Making it to the game with a clean jersey. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with Auto Owners, insurance doesn't have to be one of them. Auto Owners works with independent agents who answer when you call, so you can worry about more important things, like whether your kid is going to run toward first or third base. That's simple human sense.
Your local independent auto owner's agent is the Earl Bacon Agency. Call us at 878-2121 or visit us on the web at earlbacon.com.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. And by the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. Now back to Tom and Keith.
On Front Row Knowles. Well, hold on, false cue, because this thing did not do what I asked it to. This damn timer. So, tell Keith to pay extra for this week, Matthew, for the extra edits. Last segment coming in 3, 2, 1. Back on Front Row Knowles, Tom and Keith, as we finish up. KJ, a couple of big picture questions there. The quarterback thing is going to be interesting because they both bring something to the table. I just feel like, and I know I asked Bob this, if you're going to be 3rd and 9, I mean, Florida State commits some penalties. There's enough times where they're going the wrong direction that if the 1st and 2nd down plays don't gain anything positive, it's just, it's too tough a putt to try and convert 3rd and 12, 3rd and 10, just 3rd and long.
Especially if you're doing it, you know, every other down. You know, so you're going to have to do it 4 times in a possession of 8 or whatever happens. You know, I agree. I just say, particularly as it relates to getting ready for Jacksonville State, you know, just play them both. Give them, you know, even if you have to script it, even if you have to do it by quarters, give them some time and let's see what happens. The other thing we don't talk about is, you know, they didn't leave McKenzie in there because he had the hot hand per se. They left him in there because Jordan had cramps. He wasn't able to go back in. So having them both available to play because something can happen is also, you know, a very key part of this offense, in my opinion.
Well, I think when Jordan Travis, he exerts so much energy, he's got to be physically done at the end of game. So if you did play both, and I'm not normally a proponent of playing two, but you played it with two guys that made it work back in the day. I think there would definitely be upside to Jordan if he took a few series off. Now, as for Milton, you know, I don't know if you'd script it or if you just go by hot hand like you guys did with Jimmy Jordan and Wally Woodham or how you'd handle that. But I do think that McKenzie, I mean, he gets the ball out. He changes the arm angle. He makes throws. And you're thinking, how in the world did he just get that over the linebacker into Keyshawn? But he did. Even the shovel pass was a flare for the dramatic kind of thing, you know? So,
well, and just to be clear, that shovel pass was a called play.
Right.
It was not an ad lib play.
No, but I understand.
He wasn't able to deliver it early. So he pulled it down, gave himself some time, and then it worked open and he was able to do it. I'm not taking anything away from that. That's still a great feat, but don't any of our listeners think that he ad libbed that. That's where it was supposed to go. He just couldn't execute it easily, extended it, and then executed it very well.
Yeah, McLean, Williamson got caught up in the wash coming across the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Yeah, but it was still a good play to be able to, you know, we look at him as he can't be mobile, and yet there's some quarterbacks that just have a natural gift to only move a step or two here or there, but it buys him the time, and he seems to have that sixth sense that goes with it too to get rid of the ball. So I will say this, McKenzie missed a lot of time in fall camp, And Jordan was the better quarterback in fall camp. And so I think it's obvious why Jordan was selected as the starting quarterback. You've also got, the team knows who has played better. And if that's the way it was during the fall, and then you start the guy who didn't play better, that leads to some second guessing amongst the players too. I mean, usually, you know, coaches get asked, who's your first team? Who's your second team? And the answer is, well, the players are going to decide that. You know, we figure that out in camp. They show for themselves who's number one and number two. I think we may be doing this all season long, though, Keith, in terms of – and we also don't know if Milton may not recover right away and may need some time, you know, because he's dealing with some nerve issues there too.
There's certainly a lot of unknowns. And, again, the book says if you have two, you don't have one. But this is extraordinary circumstances. And so, therefore, I say go with two, maybe even put three in there. And let's just play it by ear.
Shout out to the Marching Chiefs, by the way, and their new home in the north end zone and the tribute they did for Bobby Bowden at halftime. I thought that was awesome with Amazing Grace. Just a really great night at Doak in general. And hopefully that the thing that I was most pleased with, though, Keith, we're talking who should be the quarterback. We need a center that snaps the ball. We're talking technical things about should you be blitzing on third and 17. If they're going to play with that effort for 60 minutes and play for one another for 60 minutes, this team has already grown leaps and bounds from what we've seen the last 4 years, period.
Remember the conversations we've had over the last four down. We weren't questioning whether they blitzed on third and 17 because they were already down 28 points. We wanted them to blitz every down. And we didn't worry about establishing the running game. Throw the ball downfield. We got to score in a hurry. So, yes, a great deal of progress has been made. But the standard remains the same. Although, I will give Jermaine Johnson credit for one thing. This is the first time I've ever heard it explained this way. And it is a rationalization. So you can't take too much into it.
It was a great quote, though. It was
a great
quote.
But it's a great quote. We're going to take this as lessons learned. We're not going to take a moral victory. We're going to take this as lessons learned and apply them going forward. I thought that was outstanding.
Yeah, he said it's not a loss, it's a lesson, is what he said, something to that effect. And, yeah, everything is what you make from it. But I thought his energy was good. I mean, we're out of time here, Keith, but he single-handedly about blew up four Notre Dame drives in a row between a sack and, a tackle for loss on a jet sweep and, another run stuff. I mean, he was impressive. There was no question.
There's a reason why he's the defensive lineman of the week in the ACC. He earned it.
Exactly. Folks, thanks for listening and subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. By the way, if you're not aware, we do a recap of FSU games immediately following the games, and that'll hit your podcast feed. So go ahead and subscribe. Until next time we talk to you in the wee hours after Jacksonville State game, he's Keith, I'm Tom, and this is Front Row Noles.